I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, guys. Dave Glover Show. I haven't tried to sell my Cardinals tickets yet. If you want to go to DGS Night at the ballpark, it's Thursday, August 1st. It's against the Cubs, and I think one of us is throwing out the first pitch. And it will, $25 will get you a ticket and a DGS Cardinals t-shirt at cardinals.com/theme. It's one more segment of the Think Tank. We have Megan McBride, Tim Fitch, and Gene Evans. So let me just preface this with what I'm about to say is absolutely going to make me sound like I'm saying, poor me, I'm a wealthy white guy. So I acknowledge that. But I was listening to Cory Booker on NPR, and I listened to him for about 40 minutes. And he talked about, you know, rent control and people who are disadvantaged should be paying less. And he talked about health insurance and people who are disadvantaged should be paying less. He talked about his initiative so that people who want to start a business get priority if they're a person of color or an LGBT. And I couldn't help but think, okay, I don't need his help. I've been lucky enough and worked hard enough that I can support my family and help to employ a few people. I'm very fortunate for that. But what does he have to offer me other than I'm going to take more of your money to do all this stuff over here? And I don't mean to sound like I don't care about people over here. Like I don't care about people of color or LGBT or people who are poor. I do. But it's just when I see the Democrat platforms, I don't see me in them at all.
Well, I think that's why you see Cory Booker at about, what, 1% or 2%. I mean, I'm not a Cory Booker fan, and I think he's disingenuous. But I didn't listen to that interview. I have no idea what his policies or his plans are or how he proposes to pay for any of them. But I think what you're talking about in general, if you talk about programs that Democrats want to see put in place, it's about priorities and it's about how you spend the money that we already have, right? So that's a fundamental difference, is how you allocate money, how you treat businesses and how they pay into the system or don't, versus you, Dave, personally, right, how your taxes are being spent, right? So I think that's a huge factor that should be debated throughout this. And I would hope President Trump would get involved too, because his tax cuts have done nothing to help average people and they've added to the deficit. So we do have less money to talk about how we get creative with programs. We don't care about the deficit anymore, apparently, across the board in this country, which I can't say I'm surprised, but you have to talk about how you prioritize your spending. And that goes back to the immigration system. To fix it, you got to spend money.
Gene, Tim?
Well, I think that the tax cuts have been great. I mean, I don't know anybody right now who doesn't have a job that wants a job. And almost everybody I know is better off. They would say they're better off today than they were before Trump took office. So businesses are growing, that the economy's booming. I mean, to say that it hasn't affected your average person, I would say I'm an average person and it's affected me greatly and everybody I know. I can't think of one person who hasn't benefited from these tax cuts. It's been awesome. So that's a huge boon.
Well, I don't know, man. I haven't seen a change in my day to day. All I know is people still can't afford their health insurance and that the deficit's continuing to go up, but we still don't apparently have money to address the issues that we have in this country.
We live in the wealthiest country in the world where people don't even realize how great they have it. Our poor people have more money than most people in the rest of the country. If you have $3,000 worth of assets, you're in the top 5% of wealth in the world. So there's always going to be somebody at the bottom. And that doesn't mean we don't care. But why can't we go back to Martin Luther King and instead of putting everybody in buckets and looking everybody through these lens, look at people through the content of their character. And one of the things Claire McCaskill said was after she lost was, the Democratic Party's gotten away from the average person. They put everybody in these different categories and it's all these special people instead of just looking at people. So instead of appealing to all these different groups, they appeal to no one, because most of us don't identify as just one with one bucket that they've put us into. We want to be treated as Americans, and where we all have opportunity. I want everyone to have opportunity, not just because they're black, white, gay, straight. I don't really care. If you want to work hard, I want you to have opportunity.
Well, one of the things I get to do is spend quite a bit of time in Europe for my job. And I spent a lot of time in Eastern Europe. Most of them are former communist countries, worked under socialism. What Cory Booker is talking about is socialism. Ask anybody in Romania today, would you like to go back to how it was 20 years ago? Socialism, like he's talking about, works for a short period of time, but eventually it collapses, as we've seen around the world. Nobody in Romania would ever want to go back to the old way. Now, by the way, they still have government-funded healthcare in Romania. So one of the employees I was working with needs a knee replacement in Romania. She's on the waiting list. She said, I hope in the next 6 months I'll be able to get in. That's what we're talking about, that a lot of these people like Cory Booker, they want to see that in this country, that kind of healthcare.
Giving all control over to the government and taking away all your choices.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's what most people are talking about. I mean, maybe that's what Cory Booker
said.
That's
what your candidates are talking about.
Some candidates are talking about that, but not all of them. Most of them are saying we need to have more options so people don't go bankrupt if they need a knee replacement or don't do it. So I think that's a very different situation. And by the way, we do have long wait times for a lot of healthcare in this country, and most people don't even get on a list because they can't afford the procedures in the first place. I mean, if you go to any specialist, it's not like you're getting in 2 weeks because we have brilliant private health care.
You get in a lot faster here than you do in other
countries.
And
you have other choices. If this one's booked, you could go to another one.
Right.
Yeah, but can you afford it? Can you pay for it? Are you going to go broke because you need to have a procedure done?
Well, I think people think that it should be free, and it shouldn't be. You should have to pay for your health care.
Of course, you should have to pay something. You shouldn't have to decide if you're going to feed your family or get health care.
But the government controls over healthcare are part of what has driven the cost up so much, because before the government got
so... That's not true. I mean, a lot of government-funded healthcare is actually cheaper per patient. The VA is actually...
Well, there's some good healthcare. Nobody wants the VA.
I was in one 2 weeks ago, and I said to my wife, this is what government health care looks like.
That's what it looks like.
I was at Cochrane.
It doesn't work.
Have you not read about all the changes that have been happening under President Trump?
It's getting better.
If this is better than what it was.
He's bragging about it regularly.
If it's better than what it was,
and how it's more efficient and people are getting in and getting service. The point is, you have to give people options. That's all. And nobody is saying that we should become a communist country. Definitely some people on the left are way more into democratic socialism than I think anyone would be, which is why I think it's great that a litmus test for these candidates is, are you a capitalist or not? And Elizabeth Warren was the first one to raise her hand and say, I am absolutely a capitalist, but we have to look at solutions that are actually going to fix our problems.
I just think, I said this the other day on the show, I was a kid, so I don't know, but I don't remember my mom and dad ever talking about healthcare. If we got sick, we went to the doctor. If we broke our arm, we got a cast. And my mom and dad would bitch about stuff the same as anyone else, but I don't remember it being an issue.
But Dave, I think we had something in common, union families.
Yeah.
And I was lucky to be raised in a union family. My husband's in a union. We have excellent health insurance, and we have excellent health insurance because they bargained and fought for excellent health insurance. That's a main reason I'm very against a lot of Democratic candidates who have even talked about wanting to remove private insurance as an option. That's not fair. If you can bargain to get something that improves your family, that you're working for, and that you are 100% paying for, as union households do, you should be able to have access.
It's only one guy, but I heard from a guy last week who said that he has his insurance through the exchanges in Obamacare. It's him, his wife, and a 15-year-old son. And I think it was $1,400 a month they pay, and each of them have a $7,000 deductible.
Right.
And he said, look,
that's not insurance.
Like, are you kidding me? I'm going to pay $30,000 before I get anything. So who benefited under Obamacare?
Oh, I lost my insurance, and then when I was forced to go on the exchange, I had an $11,000 deductible, and it was over $900 a month for one person. So I just didn't go to the doctor, because that was, and before that, when I had my private insurance that they made illegal because it didn't cover peri whatever, I could afford it, and I could go to the doctor. So the government came in, made all these changes, added all these requirements, and now I can't afford health care. So that's my point.
You put absolutely no responsibility on insurance companies anywhere in that. Like, they're just these great folks who are out there just trying to provide a great service. But it's not all government's fault. Insurance could be better if they want it to be better. And government could provide better insurance under the exchanges if everyone actually participated in them the way they were intended to be participated in. So, you know, when we have states that don't fully opt in, you're not going to have as good of a system as was intended under the law. I don't understand how in this country we all have like come around to saying that either the government or the people are the problem with healthcare. Health insurance companies
are run by people
to operate the way that they operate, and they could change. They could police themselves to cover pre-existing conditions, so you wouldn't have had to have your private insurance be dropped.
Here we have in St. Louis, if you look at the highest paid executives, how many of them work in hospitals? They're not even doctors. I mean, healthcare in general is a ripoff to a certain extent, but we have an expectation in this country to have healthcare immediately on demand, the best in the world. But nobody really wants to pay for it. So there's plenty of blame to go around, is what I'm trying to say. We have increased expectations, and we've created an industry, one of the biggest industries probably in the country, where people who work in that industry make a lot of money to figure out how to make more money. And the people at the bottom suffer. But I don't think government is the answer. I mean, I think you just blow the whole thing up and go back to the days of you go to the doctor and you pay for it. Right. And then you have like catastrophic insurance for when you really have something wrong. That would work better than what we have now, because you wouldn't have all you can't have a doctor, a physician, internal medicine cannot run an office without 10 employees. They can't anymore. And that is so much overhead, which means they pass that on to the patients. And some of that's insurance, some of it's government. And there's still not an internal medicine doctor. Might have made $200,000 or $300,000 a few years ago. Now, if they're making that much, they're working 14, 15 hours a day. So you're not going to attract the most qualified people anymore, because they don't want to work like that and make that kind of money.
I don't want to end this on such a hopeless note, but we've talked for an hour and a half about these really huge problems. And we've also talked about how we've probably never been more divided. Mm-hmm. What happens? Like, we need to solve immigration. We need to solve healthcare. And yet we're not even talking to each other on the federal level. What can happen? Give me some scenario where 5 years from now we're like, "Ooh, okay, we got that, we're much better off now."
I think if we had an answer for that, we'd be pretty rich.
Yeah.
And we'd have the next book out.
Sure.
We're a country where we elect people to represent us, and I think that we have to be careful on who we elect. And we have to put people in there that have real solutions, not those that just talk about have the government pay, have the government pay, have the government pay, and government will be affixed to all of our solutions. That's what we're hearing more and more about every day. So I don't know what, I don't think there is an easy answer here, Dave. I really don't.
One of the things I saw some research about in campaign advertising and speeches, how the word fight has become the number one word. And our the public wants that. So they want to fight, they want to vote for a fighter.
I thought it was trigger.
So. The idea of working across the aisle and compromising has become bad on both sides, and particularly at the national level, but even at the state level. Like, you don't want to be seen as compromising with the other side, when really that's really what we need, because most of our voters are in the middle. They aren't on these fringes, and people want to see compromise. Now, they may not. Okay, I didn't like everything. And I dealt with this as an elected official. They would like everything I did except for one thing, and I would get yelled at about that over and over again. But you have to be thick-skinned and say that's just the way it is if you're in a leadership position. But we have to have more people who are willing to compromise, and we need to have a public who's willing to accept that compromise and say, hey, I don't get everything I want, but the country wins.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the way that you really get down to that is that you change the way that our elections and our campaign finance work, because at the end of the day, if you're going to compromise, you can't be worried about, is that donor going to be mad at me because their one issue doesn't, they're not now going to give me that money. And now I'm going to have to run for re-election in 2 years. So really, I'm only going to work on policy for 1 year, because the year before I have to think about running and I got to raise money. And am I going to make these people mad?
Well, maybe I can throw this at you. So when I ran for the county council, I said, I'm not taking any money from anybody in kind or cash. The criticism against me was, so we're going to have one of those systems. Only rich people can run for office.
Hmm.
I'm like, you're not talking about me. I know,
right.
You're not talking about me. Ask my wife. She'll agree with me. So I don't know what the answer is there when it comes to campaign finance.
That's like where you have to do, like, hey, you don't like it maybe, but this is what's in the best interest of the country, which is that we're not going to have, I mean, the amount of money raised by the top five Democratic candidates and President Trump in the last 3 weeks alone is staggering. I mean, most of us can't even comprehend that kind of money. So when those are the stakes, there isn't an incentive to work with other people to find solutions. There just is no incentive to do it.
Right. It's like, I know I'll never be a nationally syndicated radio show host because I'm a moderate. There's no room for a moderate. No one wants that. That's not sexy enough. You want someone who's going to scream and yell and people love you or hate you. Mm-hmm. And I think the exact same thing, unfortunately, has happened in politics.
Yeah.
No one wants a moderate.
Well, it's entertainment factor almost, right? More than actually the governing and the living of your daily life. It's about what's on television and what you listen to on the radio.
10 years ago, can you imagine that we would have said one of the number one entertainment things we watch are politics? No. Like, growing up, we all had that one friend who is a political wonk, and we're like, whatever, dude. And then we had C-SPAN, and you're like, who the hell watches this?
Right.
And now, most of us go home and turn on Fox or MSNBC or go back and forth and watch the fight. It's
a sport, which is really
and
unfortunate, because as much as I love a good competition, and that's why I work in campaigns, because I do enjoy that, it's gotten to be an extreme sport when really we just need it to go back to good old fashioned.
Well, and
it
needs to be, you know, when the game is over, let's have a beer. You know, as an athlete, you know, if I'm out on the court competing, I want to kill my opponent, right? I do everything to win that game. But when the game's over, we shake hands and we go have a meal together. So
we've really lost that.
We need more of that.
Yeah.
That would be that would be
Meg McBride, Tim Fitch, Gene Evans. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. Happy Thursday. So how many minutes is it until CNN does the draw? You hip to this?
The draw for the debates?
Yes, they're making it like...
Are they doing it live, like
yes,
a Powerball or something?
Yes,
that's
it's like
awesome.
The biggest deal. It's like the countdown to, like, is it going to be Beto? Or
it's not a draw to see who's in. It's to see which candidates are in. Which okay, yeah,
yes,
neat.
Are there any candidates in this time that we're excited about that weren't in the last one?
There's this Bullock guy who I don't know much about. I did see an interview with him.
I like his name.
He's just called Bullet?
No, Bullock.
Oh, he thought he said Bullet, too. I'm
okay.
Like, hell yeah.
No, I'm voting. No, I don't care what their politics is.
I've never seen him, but I know he's wearing a cowboy hat.
Guy's fast and aerodynamic.
No, his name's Bullock, and he's white and boring. But I think he's kind of more moderate.
Add him to the pile.
So, yeah. He's going to stand out.
He's going to stand out for being moderate.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, I'm excited. I don't know. Before Mark left, he was like, I can't do another election. It's so exhausting. Maybe my brain is just broken now, but I'm
before he retired and then went and took another job.
Did I say retired or left? Because he did not retire.
No, he didn't.
maybe my brain is just broken now, and I just love it. I love it. I'm so excited for the next debates. The last debates, Dave, you remember me saying days in advance, like, I can't wait till Wednesday night. I can't wait till Thursday. It's just fun. Just saying.
I wish I didn't agree, but I do.
It's exciting.
I will be planted solidly on a couch and watching the debates. And
I'm excited about the drawing now. That's really fun. That'll give me my fix until next
week. Gosh, I brought that up as a joke.
Oh, no, that's cool.
All right.
Yeah, it's something I don't want to.
Like,
I don't want to care about it,
but
I kind of want to see.
Yeah, why wouldn't you watch it?
This whole debate, though, doesn't excite me because it's the same as the last one. The matchups might be different, but
what excites me is you know it's going to be different because now they all like, okay, I know who you are. I know it. Yeah, okay, I got it. And I think Biden might walk out and just like punch Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah,
because he was such a puss, and he knows that everyone thinks he was a puss. And I think he's gonna be as aggressive as his old ass can be.
Yeah. Just get mad about something
just
random.
Go off.
Start tearing through his podium like Chris Farley.
Yes.
Have you guys seen how poorly Bernie is doing?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's polling less than 10%.
He's become irrelevant.
Yeah. Which is just crazy because 2 short years ago he was a pretty big deal, but
well, 2 short years ago he was the only game in town.
Mm-hmm.
Now Elizabeth Warren is doing it more intelligently and articulately. Plus, you have a bunch of people who are left of her, so...
So he's kind of... I mean, I guess he started something and made something more mainstream that wasn't in the past, which is socialism. But basically, in 2016, he tripped up Hillary Clinton. I mean, he certainly didn't help her.
No.
So he didn't help his party or what he claims to be his party when he's running. And then this time around, he's not doing anything.
I do think, though, I'll stand by what I've said. I think in 30 or 40 years, we will be either a much more socialistic nation or we will be coming out of that because it failed. And I think that during that time, he will be looked on as one of the founding fathers of the socialist movement in America.
Didn't he say with his millions now that he would be happy to pay taxes if we taxed him? I think he did say that.
He did.
He was like, if you guys would just tax me. Like, isn't this all coming out of the kindness of your heart? Shouldn't you just do
you
it
can,
anyway?
Are
all those billionaires who signed the thing saying, yes, please tax us.
You
no,
can,
just give the money. That will help a lot.
There is a box you can check.
Yeah, just do it.
And say, I owe you $10,000, but I'm going to give you $20,000.
Yeah, why don't you do that, Bernie? Yeah. It's just so weird.
What everybody's saying about Bernie Sanders is he had his time. And you'd have to think that that's true.
Yeah, I think so.
I think there's a third category to your prediction of socialism, though. I think that there's my prediction. I don't know if this will happen, but if there was a third prediction, it would be that it never took root. That what is happening right now with the economy, people are starting to realize, even young people, that, man, maybe capitalism is the way it's going to go. Don't know if it's going to happen, but maybe we never actually enter into that door.
It's just so funny to me that capitalism 10 years ago, I don't think had half the bad rap that it has now. I think it's just become like a shorthand of like, hey, I'm cool, so
right.
I'm against capitalism.
Yeah.
But the same generation who says that is also the generation who subscribes to all these different luxury boxes like Etsy or Ipsy, whatever it's called, and Beauty Box, and you can spend all your money doing this and this. There's so many products that you can choose from and so many things tailored to you. That only is born out of capitalism. Like, all the cool stuff we get to experience now is because of a capitalist society. So the same people that consume that and love that and would be pissed if it ever went away don't seem to get the irony there.
Oh, I think... And I truly believe this. I'm not just saying this to make an impression. I think of all the people who would right now say, I would love some Diet Coke of socialism, maybe 2% would be happy with it. I truly think 98% would be like, this is terrible.
Do you think 98% of people just think, well, we'd be able to have a handle on it? We just make a few tweaks here and there on our current system to make it a little more socialist, but we would never actually go full throttle. Now, we say that's what we want, but we would never actually do that.
I think about 75% of people in general don't have any idea what they're talking about. I think they say, I'm a this or I'm a that. Because that's what their friends are, or that's what their favorite radio or television personality says. I think most people, their knowledge of things is mud puddle deep. Myself included, at least, but I'm honest about it. That, like Ryan said the other day, something I've been saying for years, that climate change, I don't friggin' know. I mean, every night I watch How the Universe Works, I have a better working idea of the planet than most people out there. I have no idea whether we're warming the planet or not, or if it really is, or if it's just, I don't know.
The problem is I don't even know who to trust on that issue. Because whenever an issue like that the layman really can't get, you're not a scientist. You're not going to go study this. So you have to trust somebody. I don't even know who to trust because the issue's so politicized that everybody's got an angle at it before it even gets to the science.
I don't know what isn't these days. I can't think of a single topic that's not politicized.
Well, if you think about economy, at least we can discuss that and kind of understand it because we participate in it. But we're not scientists. We don't participate in
that.
But I mean,
like on Think Tank just now, Megan McBride was saying like, no, the numbers are the numbers, but it's only helping a certain number of people. It's not helping poor people. It's not helping the middle class people. The Trump tax cuts aren't working. And then Gene said, no, they're working great. I mean, people just disagree about what used to be facts.
Well, and when you make, and no disrespect to Megan, but when you just make a statement that's like, it's not helping poor people, but like, how is it... But either prove that or disprove that, or that's just like a statement anyone can make about anything. Like,
yeah, one thing Gene said was, anyone who wants a job right now has a job. Now, that's something we haven't been able to say for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
And if that's true, which I think it is, That to me is the number one indicator of how things are going. That if you are an American citizen and you would like to work, you can have a job. You may not be the CEO of a company, but you got a job. That seems to be 101 basic. Where do we start with a good civilization?
I feel you.
Yeah. Back to your question of who would thrive under socialism. Seems like the people who would believe in a universal basic income and who would then not work, those are the people who would be happy with it.
But here's the thing, though, and I just don't know this because I'm ignorant on the topic. I haven't read enough. There have been socialist countries, experiments, and there still are. What do they do with the lazies? Because you know they have them. Like, do they go, okay, you got us on that, man. Well, you don't have to work and you're just going to lay there and eat papaya, fine. Or are they like, put them in jail? Like, because they have to have something to do with people that don't produce anything.
Well, I think true socialist / communist nations have just not worked. You know, they don't do anything with those people, and then their economy, like Iceland, their economy completely collapsed in 2008. It's only come back because of tourism, but they're so small that they're kind of a microcosm for the rest of Europe, because Europe's kind of dabbling in socialism, but they all come from capitalist roots. So they haven't quite had to pay the piper yet. They're big. Their economies are big enough to absorb it for, you know, maybe 100 years. Who knows? But you have a country like Iceland that's way smaller than the rest of them, and it didn't work.
That's interesting, Ryan, because if we were to do that, we would obviously be coming from a capitalist society, and we might be able to sustain it for a while.
Oh, yeah.
But we were just talking the other day, I believe during the 6 o'clock hour, about how Dave's generation, a lot of people in my generation, feel like you guys did something to us and you left us with a mess on our hands, whether it be environmentally or economically. Maybe that's my generation's version of running out all the Social Security. It's just like, we'll just make it socialism and we'll be okay for a couple generations, and then our grandkids will have to deal with it.
They'll have literally nothing.
It's just another version of that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it really is. Because we in this room would be fine.
Yeah.
Probably for the rest of our lives.
And that's why I think a lot of young people are like, why wouldn't we do it? It's like, well, yeah, because it would work. But then you're going to have ancestors, and I don't know if you want
them
to...
They're kind of starting from scratch.
Absolutely.
When you hear some weird... talk about politicizing everything. I'm not sure what state this is in, but they had a state fair and they had donut holes. You following me?
Mm-hmm.
And with each donut hole, you get 3 plastic syringes with 3 different fillings that you and the kids can poke the syringe, not metal, but just plastic, into the donut hole and fill it with like jelly or whipped cream or Bavarian cream. And there was so much outcry and protests because these syringes are unnecessary, and like straws are going to end up in the ocean and choking dolphins, that they did away with the syringes, and now they're using trays made out of composted paper, and you can dip your donut holes in the fillings.
You know what? Good for them. And I expect next time Pride comes through St. Louis, or next time we have a Stanley Cup parade, or next time anything happens that's a festival or anything like that, you're using all biodegradable stuff. Because what's the difference between the stupid syringe and a Bud Light can?
Nothing.
There is none. It's still wasteful. I hate that we focus in on these dumb little things, but the big problem, which is just leaving your trash on the ground, isn't actually addressed.
Yeah, I thought the point of your story was going to be...
like drug paraphernalia.
I did too. Hey, all the kids can have these syringes.
When I started reading it, I'm like, oh, I bet this is about the opioid.
If you want to talk about useless plastics, we got time to talk about that. Oh my gosh, most of the stuff we manufacture is completely useless. Go into any Target store and rip down half the stuff on the shelves and say, stop manufacturing this. It's just going to end up in the ocean.
I've never heard you speak so badly about Target before.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know what's bugging me?
What?
I understand when you are accused of something and you beat the rap, I get it. You know, we've all had that happen.
I've
in
beat so many reps.
Bigger or smaller ways. But I'm just wishing ill on Kevin Spacey now. Like, you know, they dicked up the case, and maybe this kid that accused him, maybe he made this one up, or maybe he had his own stuff to hide. Who knows? But now Kevin Spacey's just so smug. And
yeah, he's so arrogant about it, walking into court with his chicken wings out.
God, man.
Well.
But Kevin, we all know you did it a bunch of times.
Yeah, we just couldn't get you on this one, but we all know you're a creep.
It's kind of a Cosby kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I know. That's the problem with taking something to trial that's probably not going to work.
Yeah. No, we talked about that with OJ.
You've legitimized him.
When you take something to trial, you better be damn ready to win. And that's why there's so many plea deals, because prosecutors want a sure thing. Prosecutors hate to lose, because when someone is let off, it's like, what the hell is that all about? Why'd you waste all of our money and time on an innocent person? And then people who did it say, okay, I'd rather go for 2 years than maybe go for 20, so I'm going to take the deal. That's why all these deals are made.
Mm-hmm. Does it hurt a lawyer's career, like, financially, to lose cases?
Yeah. I mean, if people know. And now with the internet, you can know much more. But, you know, every attorney loses the cases.
Dave, did you ever read John Grisham novels whenever you were a lawyer?
No. I saw The Firm, and it really bothered me. I can't remember exactly what it was about it. But there was something in The Firm that really, I did read it, and then I saw it, and it bothered me, and after that, I was just like, no. No, I was only really invested in being a lawyer in that way, in law school, and even then, it was only my first year when I showed up carrying a briefcase full of ding-dongs. Once I, you know, my friends were like, hey, idiot, let's go play softball. Then I was kind of out of that.
Did you watch Law and Order?
I did. No. I watched L.A. Law. That was my law show.
Did you ever get to yell, you can't handle the truth in court?
No, but I did get to try cases.
Did you ever get to go like, objection?
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, how would you say it?
Objection, Your Honor.
However it needed to be said. No, I was like, I wasn't a great one, but I was a real trial attorney for a while.
I bet you were like animated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's all I have. You met me.
I was like looking over the case 2 seconds before. Okay, murder guy.
I hadn't done my homework. No, I did. I did, though, have a Jack Nicholson type moment where I can't get into too much detail, but a guy who I represented had worked for this giant phone company, and he had sold a giant phone system to like a university, and then he got screwed on his commission to the tune of like $200,000. And I was handling it just myself. I was kind of a baby attorney, but they had trusted me to do it. And we flew to, I think, Chicago, and took the CEO of this giant company's deposition. And this guy was so smug. And he was, and here I'm 24, 25 years old, and he is offended that he has to answer any of my questions. And I intentionally kept him there for 9 hours. And we finally got to the end. And the whole thing was whether he knew or not. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and by the end, you've met me, Rach. I was like, okay, I get it. So people just do things underneath you that you don't even know that they're doing because you don't have any sort of say-so in this company. And he's so tired and he's so mad. And he's like, nothing happens in this company that I don't know about. And I'm like, so then you knew that they screwed Mike out of 200 grand? He's like, of course I knew. And whoa, and cool. It was just like that.
And then it was silent.
And it truly was silent. And he got up and walked out, and we flew back to St. Louis and got drunk.
Oh, man.
I had one other moment like that where the only time I've been to Napa Valley was to do this case, and I was representing a company that, and I forget exactly what it was, but it was basically like hermetically sealed wine in little glasses, sort of like a six-pack, and everyone was suing everybody. And so they had their expert, and he was just like, I think he might have literally been wearing an ascot. And he was just Mr. Wine. And his job was to crap all over my client's product and say, no one would have ever bought this. And so we're in the case is in St. Louis, but I'm taking his depot in Napa. And so for like 3 hours, I'm just like this. I have the big, big puppy eyes, and I'm like, tell me more. And he's like, well, when I went to Italy. And so then I'm like, well, what kind of person would buy a six-pack of wine? He's like, oh, the worst kind of people. I'm like, you mean like just like working class, dirt under their fingers, like hard hat, lunch bucket Joe? And he's like, precisely. And I'm like, the kind of people that'll be on this jury in St. Louis? And again, total silence. And the guy goes, and the other attorney was like, okay.
All right, Glover.
And we settled the case.
Your two big wins.
There really were. Out of a 10-year career, those are the two moments I take away.
I'm just picturing you in court, and it's like you're doing your thing, and you take off the suit jacket and start rolling up your sleeves, and then you turn around, and the whole back of your dress shirt is just wrinkly dirty.
Yeah.
The illusion is shattered.
100%. My wig is askew.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.